File 2. In the morning I procured at the prefecture a full report of all the evidence elicited, and at the various newspaper offices a copy of every paper in which, from first to last, had been published any decisive information in regard to this sad affair. Freed from all that was positively disproved, this mass of information stood thus. Marie Roget left the residence of her mother in Rue Pavée Saint-André about 9 o'clock in the morning of Sunday, June the 22nd. In going out she gave notice to a Monsieur Jacques Saint-Eustace, and to him only, of her intention to spend the day with an aunt who resided in the Rue des Drômes. The Rue des Drômes is a short and narrow but populous thoroughfare, not far from the banks of the river, and at a distance of some 2 miles, in the most direct course possible from the pension of Madame Roget. Saint Eustace was the accepted suitor of Marie, and lodged, as well as took his meals, at the pension. He was to have gone for his betrothed at dusk, and to have escorted her home. In the afternoon, however, it came on to rain heavily, and supposing that she would remain all night at her aunt's, as she had done under similar circumstances before, he did not think it necessary to keep his promise. As night drew on, Madame Roget, who was an infirm old lady, 70 years of age, was heard to express a fear that she should never see Marie again. But this observation attracted little attention at the time. On Monday, it was ascertained that the girl had not been to the Rue des Drômes, and when the day elapsed without tidings of her, a tardy search was instituted at several points in the city and its environs. It was not, however, until the 4th day from the period of her disappearance that anything satisfactory was ascertained respecting her. On this day, Wednesday, the 25th of June, a Monsieur Beauvais, who with a friend had been making inquiries for Marie near the Barrière du Roule, on the shore of the Seine, which is opposite the Rue Pavée Saint-André, was informed that a corpse had just been towed ashore by some fishermen, who had found it floating in the river. Upon seeing the body, Beauvais, after some hesitation, identified it as that of the perfumery girl. His friend recognized it more promptly. The face was suffused with dark blood, some of which issued from the mouth. No foam was seen, as in the case of the merely drowned. There was no discoloration in the cellular tissue. About the throat were bruises and impressions of fingers. The arms were bent over on the chest and were rigid. The right hand was clenched, the left partially open. On the left wrist were 2 circular excoriations, apparently the effect of ropes, or of a rope in more than one volution. A part of the right wrist also was much chafed, as well as the back throughout its extent, but more especially at the shoulder blades. In bringing the body to the shore, the fisherman had attached it to a rope, but none of the excoriations had been affected by this. The flesh of the neck was much swollen. There were no cuts apparent or bruises which appeared the effect of blows. A piece of lace was found tied so tightly around the neck as to be hidden from sight. It was completely buried in the flesh and was fastened by a knot which lay just under the left ear. This alone would have sufficed to produce death. The medical testimony spoke confidently of the virtuous character of the deceased. She had been subjected, it said, to brutal violence. The corpse was in such condition when found that there could have been no difficulty in its recognition by friends. The dress was much torn and otherwise disordered. In the outer garment, a slit about 1 foot wide had been torn upward from the bottom hem to the waist, but not torn off. It was wound 3 times around the waist and secured by a sort of hitch in the back. The dress immediately beneath the frock was of fine muslin, and from this a slip 18 inches wide had been torn entirely out, torn very evenly and with great care. It was found around her neck, fitting loosely and secured with a hard knot. Over this muslin slip and the slip of lace, the strings of a bonnet were attached, the bonnet being appended. The knot, by which the strings of the bonnet were fastened, was not a lady's, but a slip or a sailor's knot. After the recognition of the corpse, it was not, as usual, taken to the morgue, this formality being superfluous, but hastily interred not far from the spot at which it was brought ashore. Through the exertions of Beauvais, the matter was industriously hushed up as far as possible, and several days had elapsed before any public emotion resulted. A weekly paper, however, at length took up the theme. The corpse was disinterred and a re-examination instituted, but nothing was elicited beyond what had been already noted. The clothes, however, were now submitted to the mother and friends of the deceased, and fully identified as those worn by the girl upon leaving home. Meantime, the excitement increased hourly. Several individuals were arrested and discharged. St. Eustace fell especially under suspicion, and he failed at first to give an intelligible account of his whereabouts during the Sunday on which Marie left home. Subsequently, however, he submitted to Monsieur G. affidavits accounting satisfactorily for every hour of the day in question. As time passed and no discovery ensued, 1,000 contradictory rumours were circulated, and journalists busied themselves in suggestions. Among these, the one which attracted the most notice was the idea that Marie Roget still lived, that the corpse found in the Seine was that of some other unfortunate. It will be proper that I submit to the reader some passages which embody the suggestion alluded to. These passages are literal translations from L'Étoile, a paper conducted in general with much ability. Mademoiselle Roget left her mother's house on Sunday morning, June the 22nd, with the ostensible purpose of going to see her aunt or some other connection in the Rue des Drômes. From that hour nobody is proved to have seen her. There is no trace or tidings of her at all. There has no person whatever come forward so far who saw her at all on that day after she left her mother's door. Now, though we have no evidence that Marie Roget was in the land of the living after 9 o'clock on Sunday, June the 22nd, we have proof that up to that hour she was alive. On Wednesday noon at 12, a female body was discovered afloat on the shore of the Barrière du Roule. This was, even if we presume that Marie Roget was thrown into the river within 3 hours after she left her mother's house, only 3 days from the time she left her home, 3 days to an hour. But it is folly to suppose that the murder, if murder was committed on her body, could have been consummated soon enough to have enabled her murderers to throw the body into the river before midnight. Those who are guilty of such horrid crimes choose darkness rather than light. Thus we see that if the body found in the river was that of Marie Roget, it could only have been in the water 2.5 days or 3 at the outside. All experience has shown that drowned bodies, or bodies thrown into the water immediately after death by violence, require from 6 to 10 days for sufficient decomposition to take place to bring them to the top of the water. Even where a cannon is fired over a corpse and it rises before at least 5 or 6 days' immersion, it sinks again if left alone. Now, we ask, what was there in this case to cause a departure from the ordinary course of nature? If the body had been kept in its mangled state on shore until Tuesday night, some trace would be found on shore of the murderers. It is a doubtful point, also, whether the body would be soon afloat, even were it thrown in after being dead 2 days. And furthermore, it is exceedingly improbable that any villains who had committed such a murder, as is here supposed, would have thrown the body in without weight to sink it, when such a precaution could have so easily been taken. The editor here proceeds to argue that the body must have been in the water not 3 days merely, but at least 5 times 3 days, because it was so far decomposed that Beauvais had great difficulty in recognizing it. This latter point, however, was fully disproved. I continue the translation. What, then, are the facts on which Monsieur Beauvais says that he has no doubt the body was that of Marie Roget? He ripped up the gown sleeve and says he found marks which satisfied him of the identity. The public generally suppose those marks to have consisted of some description of scars. He rubbed the arm and found hair upon it, something as indefinite, we think, as can readily be imagined, as little conclusive as finding an arm in the sleeve. Monsieur Beauvais did not return that night, but sent word to Madame Roget at 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening that an investigation was still in progress respecting her daughter. If we allow that Madame Roget, from her age and grief, could not go over, which is allowing a great deal, there certainly must have been someone who would have thought it worthwhile to go over and attend the investigation, if they thought the body was that of Marie. Nobody went over. There was nothing said or heard about the matter in the Rue Pavée Saint-André that reached even the occupants of the same building. Monsieur Saint-Eustace, the lover and intended husband of Marie, who boarded in her mother's house, deposes that he did not hear of the discovery of the body of his intended until the next morning, when Monsieur Beauvais came into his chamber and told him of it. For an item of news like this, it strikes us it was very coolly received. In this way, the journal endeavoured to create the impression of an apathy on the part of the relatives of Marie, inconsistent with the supposition that these relatives believed the corpse to be hers. Its insinuations amount to this, that Marie, with the connivance of her friends, had absented herself from the city for reasons involving a charge against her chastity, and that these friends, upon the discovery of a corpse in the Seine, somewhat resembling that of the girl, had availed themselves of the opportunity to impress the public with the belief of her death. But L'Étoile was again overhasty. It was distinctly proved that no apathy, such as was imagined, existed, that the old lady was exceedingly feeble, and so agitated as to be unable to attend to any duty, that Saint-Eustace, so far from receiving the news coolly, was distracted with grief, and bore himself so frantically that Monsieur Beauvais prevailed upon a friend and relative to take charge of him and prevent his attending the examination at the disinterment. Moreover, although it was stated by L'Étoile that the corpse was reinterred at the public expense, that an advantageous offer of private sepulture was absolutely declined by the family, and that no member of the family attended the ceremonial. Although, I say, all this was asserted by L'Étoile in furtherance of the impression it designed to convey, yet all this was satisfactorily disproved. In a subsequent number of the paper, an attempt was made to throw suspicion upon Beauvais himself. The editor says, "Now then a change comes over the matter. We are told that on one occasion, while a Madame B was at Madame Roget's house, Monsieur Beauvais, who was going out, told her that a gendarme was expected there, and that she, Madame B, must not say anything to the gendarme until he returned, and let the matter be for him. In the present posture of affairs, Monsieur Beauvais appears to have the whole matter locked up in his head. A single step cannot be taken without Monsieur Beauvais, for, go which way you will, you run against him. For some reason, he determines that nobody shall have anything to do with the proceedings but himself, and he has elbowed the male relatives out of the way, according to their representations, in a very singular manner. He seems to have been very much averse to permitting the relatives to see the body. By the following fact, some colour was given to the suspicion thus thrown upon Beauvais. A visitor at his office, a few days prior to the girl's disappearance, and during the absence of its occupant, had observed a rose in the keyhole of the door, and the name Marie inscribed upon a slate which hung near at hand. The general impression, so far as we were enabled to glean it from the newspapers, seemed to be that Marie had been the victim of a gang of desperadoes, that by these she had been borne across the river, maltreated and murdered.